This is the ESPN Aussie Hoops Hour. Kane Pittman and Olga Norledge back with you again, as we're going to be with some serious regularity through the Olympics. And this time, we're a little bit more excited, Olgs, because we've seen a couple of really meaningful games for the Boomers against Team USA and against Serbia. They go down by 6 points to Team USA just a couple of hours ago. Now, they beat Serbia. Overall, plenty to feel positive about. I'm not sure what you would be feeling, though, right now, Olgs, because it's approximately 7:30 a.m. This game tipped off at 2 a.m. Australian time. You haven't been back to bed yet. You've been riding. I think you just ran out and got a takeaway coffee. So I'm not as concerned about the Boomers' play over the last 2 days as I am your well-being right now. Are you okay?
I'm all right. It was annoying when the games, when we knew the games were at 2 a.m. It's just such an awkward time, because it's, and if you, when I'm sort of texting people around Australian basketball, I'm asking the same question: is, are you staying up or are you waking up? Mm-hmm. Right. I try to do both. I try to go to bed, get 4 hours, do this, get some more sleep. But look, it's still dark outside. I just walked out. It's very cold here in Melbourne. Went and got my little coffee. So like I should be okay. But I'm, like I said off air, I'm approaching delirium. So we'll see what happens.
Hey, Olgs, it warmed my heart these last 2 days watching basketball at noon. It was like I was back in Australia.
I hate you.
On League Pass. It was a beautiful time over here. It's only 5:30 p.m. So we're going to wrap up this podcast. It's still summer, stinking hot outside. There might even be some pool time still left for me today. But first, we're going to get into what we saw from the Boomers. And, you know, I do think overall, we have seen a little bit of a shift now from what has to be said was a very negative last week when it came to this Boomers squad being announced, some frustration and some, I think, legitimate question marks about why decisions were made and why the direction Brian Gorgeous and the coaching staff went that way. But now we've seen, now overall, as I said, a loss to USA, a win over Serbia, but I think some really positive signs. I think for me, outside of the result, yes, you love getting a win today, but just looking at the rotation, not necessarily the starters, but looking at the rotation and the lineup combinations that Gorge went with was the number one fascination for me as I had my notebook out, taking little notes, watching these games. What stood out to you lineup-wise, if we want to start there?
Ooh, so the thing that I think was the most jarring was the big rotation, mm-hmm. Which and we'll get into a lot of stuff, yeah. But I think that was the main one, which, and I flagged it going into that game against Team USA, that the feeling was that Gorgeous and that coaching staff was going to lean into Will Magnet as the backup big. And I think that's also the through line of what this team wants to be. Instead of Duop Reith, who I think is a superior offensive player, obviously a superior shooter than Will Magnet, they're leaning into someone like Will Magnet as the backup five, someone who I think has a better motor, is a better rim protector, runs rim to rim, probably plays in the pick and roll a little bit better. That's what they wanted to lean into. They want the identity of this team to be one that guards really, really well and then can push the pace. They feel like Will Magnet, his defensive capacity, his athleticism, as much as he's slightly undersized, he's 6'9", maybe 6'10", on a good day, they feel like he does that. So that was the most interesting thing. Not just that he's in, but that Duop Reith is effectively completely out of the rotation after starting at the World Cup. Obviously, he started because Landau wasn't there. But the fact that Duop Reith, coming off a really good NBA season, he's just out of the rotation, again, a little bit jarring, but the reasoning, I think, does make some sense.
I had that as my number one note as well, just looking at the four and the five and what type of players they're going to go through. Now, keep in mind that, you know, with Team USA and then this Serbia team, they've played two teams that have real size. So, yeah, I think if we project ahead to the Olympics, I think it looks different against a team like Canada. Or, you know, I certainly hope that it looks different. We spoke about this a little bit on Nothing But Net over the weekend on ESPN. You know, I would love to see whether you're playing Canada, Spain, or any of these group games that you have, maybe you can mix and match the lineups a little bit because you're playing three very different teams. And of course, Greece with someone like Giannis that maybe you do want a bit more size, but you also need the athleticism to guard the perimeter because they're going to shoot a lot of threes. So the whole way through, and you know this, we've had this discussion, I've thought, you know, would you bring a third center? And would Will Magnet make this squad? And I didn't have him in my initial squad, but I did have someone like Xavier Cooks because I thought that the athleticism was going to matter. So certainly a curiosity for me has been, you know, would they go to the double big lineups, whether it was Reith and Landau or Landale and Magne. Now, Magne played 26 minutes across these two games, so he certainly looks like the guy that they're favoring right now. I almost wonder, as this continues to move on, to me, the Boomers looked at their best, particularly defensively, but then getting up the floor, as you pointed to, with the athletic lineups. And I don't think now in modern basketball, it's so much about the actual height of the player as much as can they move? Can they shoot threes? So I am curious moving forward if Reith moves in. I wouldn't mind seeing more of him playing in the four or alongside Magne or alongside Landale, because there's no Cooks there, because there's no super athlete like the Jack White that didn't make this team either. I wouldn't mind, and I'm curious to see where they lean into that a little bit more than Nick Kay, because I do think, you know, we saw against Team USA and to a lesser extent Serbia. I think we're definitely going to see it against Canada. The more athletes, particularly defensively, and being able to try and get easy buckets going the other way, I think the better off you are.
I think the shooting part of it is maybe the thing that could see Reith work his way back into the rotation. Yep. We saw in that game today against Serbia, Nick Kay. So Nick Kay played, 50 some odd minutes across both games, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to be a primary part of this team, a key part of this rotation. He's going to start at the four for this team. And again, we sort of knew this once the team was selected. We knew that that was the spot he was going to fill. Now, what he does is the key thing he has is he's reliable defensively. They like that. He plays straight up. He's in the right spots. That's what he does. Against Team USA today, against Serbia today, sorry, I think he was 1 of 6, 1 of 7 from three. Got a lot of good looks from three, didn't knock him down. I wonder if that's maybe going to be the swing thing. The problem for Reith is that Landale is going to take the bulk of those minutes at the five, and then they really like what Magne brings. And I think Magne has actually been quite good over these two games. Then at the four spot, it's Nick Kay. He plays a good chunk of minutes. And then you have Jack McVay, who does bring something different to that lineup. He's a bundle of energy. He's that pick and pop threat. He's able to find his spots and get open and score the ball. And so I don't know where the minutes at the four are, especially because I think this coaching staff prefers to play down as opposed to playing up. I think that they prefer playing Giddy or Exum or Dyson Daniels at the four as opposed to going super big and playing Duop Reith, because I think that they think that that going small is probably a better defensive option than going with Reith, who I don't think they trust defensively.
Yeah, I think that is going to be the fascinating point. And yeah, particularly against a Canada team where whether it's RJ Barrett, Dylan Brooks, SGA, Jamal Murray, they're going to play small, Dwight Powell at the five. I think that's actually the type of game where you would push Josh Green into the starting lineup, which I think has been a little bit of a curiosity that he wasn't there. I think a lot of people figured he would start. And then you have Dyson Daniels, Josh Green, and play those two athletic guys that can switch. And even, you know, whether it is a Patty Mills or it is an Exum that comes in there, I think against Canada, it might make more sense to go Exum, Green, Daniels, because you're going to have mega athletes on that Canada team that's going to play small and be able to get their own buckets. I think defense is going to be at a premium in that matchup. But the lineups are going to be a continued watch point for this team. Let us know what you thought of the first two games. Any gripes with the rotation? Let's be honest, there would have been based on what we see on social media. So whether it's YouTube comments or it is on social media, hit us up and let us know what you thought about the rotation. Let's get to some positives, though, and because there were plenty. And look, let's face it, the biggest talking point, I think, coming into these games was Matisse Thybulle not being there. We discussed Dyson Daniels and his defensive potential and the fact that, you know, I think it's been a little bit overlooked just how great he is at the NBA level right now as an individual defender and the trust he's had from the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, if you're a fan of the Atlanta Hawks, you're probably feeling pretty nice about what you've seen the last few days as well. So he comes in as the starter. We projected he was going to be a guy that was going to get big minutes for this team. And I think he delivered against really quality opposition in these first two games.
Dyson Daniels has been really, really good.
Yeah.
And again, I was trying to figure out what the thing with Matisse was, and was it, and why there was such an uproar and an outrage, and was it the fact that he was obviously a hero for the Boomers in Tokyo? I think I put a lot of it down to the fact that he's just more famous because he played for the Sixers, which is a bigger team, while Ben Simmons was there. So a lot of the Australian consciousness was sort of upon him. So they know who he is, right? Of course, he's a really talented player, and even now, I would have him on my team.
I would still pick him as well. Before you go any further, let's make that clear. I would have him on the team, and I don't think you can get enough of these defenders like that.
100%. And even watching these games, I feel the exact same way.
Yes.
Right. As much as I think Dele has actually, in his little spurts, I think he's actually done a really good job. The Joe Ingles spot, I could take it or leave it. The Duop Reid spot, if he's going to not play minutes, have Matisse Thybulle there, right? As a potential option at the four. But that's neither here nor there. Dyson Daniels, I think, has been really, really impressive. One, as a point of attack defender, which again, we knew that that's what he excelled at. I think he was probably the best on this Australian extended squad at doing that. But then offensively as well, him as a cutter, he hit a really big three today. I think he's finding himself in the right spots, working pretty well off this team. And this team wants to get stops and run out. And I think he does a really good job of being disruptive defensively, picking up 94 feet, helping them get those stops. And then his athleticism means that he can also facilitate them pushing the pace and running out. So he's someone who I think will absolutely fill practically the exact same role that Matisse Thybulle did at the Tokyo Olympics. But I think there's potential for him to do it in a more meaningful way, because I don't think he's as disruptive as Matisse Thybulle, because Thybulle flies around, right? But I think Dyson Daniels is more reliable. I think he's more disciplined. He stays down. He stays in front of his man. He glides around with his guy, sticks to him. And I think at this sort of level, I think that's a really valuable thing to have.
I think you're right. I think with Thybulle, to your point, as an off-ball guy, as a guy that can cause chaos, you know, you look at someone like SGA that's going to get to that mid-range, is going to get off the dribble and, let's face it, probably beat his guy off the dribble and get to really dangerous spots. Is Thybulle helpful in those lineups? I even think against Giannis, someone that's going to try and get downhill and crash through defenders, could Thybulle be a helpful body there? The answer is probably yes. So I agree with you. I would still have him in this group, but if you just look at what we've seen against two high-quality opposition teams and the minutes that have been distributed here, you know, as I already mentioned, Josh Green, he's a guy that's probably playing a few fewer minutes than I thought he would have. Dante Exum is also coming off the bench here. So they're not short for guys that can play that role, are going to be asked to play that defensive role there. So again, I don't know how many people are going to agree with it, but when you look at the minutes and the way they've been spread out so far, and the ability for Dyson Daniels to step into that role, and really everyone looking at it now and saying, yes, they're pushing Dyson Daniels. They believe he's ready. We'll see how it goes through the Olympics, but a really positive start. It's time now for Built Different, presented by PointsBet. And while we continue to talk about the positives on this team, Olgs, there are probably a number of ways we could have gone down here, but I thought the performance from Jock Landale against Team USA, right across the board, absolutely stuffing the stat sheet, 20-plus points, 7 rebounds. He had 6 assists. He had a couple of steals. He was so efficient from two-point range, particularly in that two-man game with Josh Giddey and the guards. And as a role man, which we know he can do, Landale against the best team in the world, stacked with NBA talent. We know that he's potentially in for a revenge series here. We know he missed the World Cup. But he also had a really tough stretch through the NBA season trying to get healthy. He's been open about it. But I thought after everything he's been through in the last 12 months, this was a really impressive performance against Team USA.
I don't think enough people comprehended how serious that ankle injury was during those warm-up games before the World Cup. That held him out of the start of the NBA season. And then he obviously worked his way back into the rotation, and obviously some opportunity came, and he was able to be a really important piece of a Houston Rockets team that performed really well at the end of the season. Yeah. And he's carried that form into this Olympic campaign as well, where against Team USA, he had 20 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists in that game. Of those 7 rebounds, all 7 offensive as well. And that is the key part of the skill set he brings. His ability to crash the boards, create second shots. That is a creation advantage that Jock Landale brings that not many other bigs in world basketball can do at that level. His ability to work with Josh Giddey on those pick and rolls, picking and popping, and then when he gets that ball, those quick dribble handoffs to Patty Mills or whomever, he's able to get those 6 assists. He's going to be a really important part of this team. It's Josh Giddey and Jock Landale as the sort of 1A and 1B is, I think, the main primary options on this team. And I think Landale has the capacity to do that. And he showed that against Team USA, against Joel Embiid and Anthony Davis. I don't know if you can be sort of built more differently than that.
Yeah, you talk about facilitation from the center position. Australian basketball has been very lucky with some great centers in the past that were able to do that. And Landale against Team USA was absolutely awesome, and it was a perfect start for Olympic preparations for Landale and the Boomers.
What are you really gambling with? For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.
All right, let's keep things moving now. With some of the, we'll say positives, but let's call this a roller coaster for what we saw over the first two games. Let's talk about Paddy Mills. So he has become, you know, surprisingly to me, and maybe it's just being caught up in the frustration or the question marks over this team, or maybe just the, I guess, impatience coming off the bronze in Tokyo, expecting that that's always going to be the level. Paddy Mills has been a legend of basketball in this country, but he hasn't played in the NBA a lot over the last few years. He's had some struggles shooting the ball in the green and gold of late. I thought that he was better than he got credit for at the World Cup last year, but he struggled against Team USA. 2-for-8 from the field, had a whole bunch of turnovers. Still in the starting lineup today against Serbia. And it was back looking like Paddy Mills again, 7-for-13 from the field. He hit 4 threes, and we can get into that, how important that is for this team. He was flying off those screen actions that you just mentioned there. He was able to put the ball on the floor and get to his spot and provide actual floor spacing for this team that they don't have a lot of. So Paddy Mills was awesome today, 28 points. And if you looked at social media last night and then a few hours later you get that performance, hopefully there is some cooling of the Jets. I'm not saying you've been overly critical of him, Olgs, but I do feel like I've been on a little bit of an island. We're just hanging on to Paddy Mills and the importance of the skill set for this team.
Yeah, it's two things. I understand the skill set part of it. The first thing is, after the World Cup, what was something that Brian Gorgeous and the coaching staff were talking about ad nauseum on why he thought maybe his players weren't completely up to it at the World Cup? Do you remember? You know the thing that he was saying the entire time, which was our guys weren't playing high level basketball. They weren't playing a ton of minutes, and so they came into the World Cup slightly underdone. And so then we go into this Olympic campaign. Paddy Mills, he would have played the least amount of minutes out of any Australian Boomer on his domestic team, on his professional team. And so he comes in, and so there is obviously a fear that he may not be at the level because he just hasn't played much professional basketball. Gorgeous said after the game today that we just need to get games and reps into Paddy Mills. The problem is there aren't that many more games and reps that you can get into him before the group phase starts at the Olympics. So that's one thing that's sort of iffy. The other thing where I think is maybe gets a bit lost in translation is I think a lot of people still think that Paddy Mills can play 15 to 20 minutes on this team. He played 28 minutes today and was great, right? I think a lot of people just think that he shouldn't be playing alongside Josh Giddey for a lot of reasons. Defensively is the primary one. Very difficult to see those two coexisting on the floor for an extended period of time on the defensive end. You need some real insurance around them if you're going to do that. But then I also think Paddy Mills largely needs the ball in his hands, or he needs to initiate. And I think a lot of the success that he had today against Serbia was with Josh Giddey on the floor. And I think a lot of Josh Giddey's success was with Paddy off the floor. I think there is a way to stagger these two guys without completely taking away from them. I get that there is a theoretical world where their skill sets do complement each other, but I think they have to figure out a way to stagger them. And I think we saw it today. Josh Giddey got pulled after 4 or 5 minutes, and sort of Paddy had his sort of run as the initiator, and then Josh Giddey came on and had his run. That run at the end of the game, Josh Giddey wasn't on the floor, and I think it was because Paddy was rolling and they lent into a team that was complementary to him.
Yeah, Paddy Mills plus 22. The Boomers plus 22 with Paddy Mills on the floor today, minus 2 with Josh Giddey. And oh, it's going to be interesting. We did see in the World Cup, and it kind of changed the way it went on, but there was a stretch there where Giddey was the one that would quickly come off the floor and then get back on for the back end of the first quarters early into the second quarter. I just don't know if the Boomers are going to go on a run here. And we know that's why I think playing against USA and Serbia is such great preparation, because you're playing against world-class teams. So, okay, we're going to come into the World Cup. We know we're playing Spain. We need to be at the best of our game. And we're not playing China. We're playing one of the best teams in the world. So we're going to be geared up and we're going to be prepared and actually have had high-level competition. So to your point about what Gorge said, I think that makes sense. I just, at times, and against Team USA, and it's hard to know in the second half of that game, I thought the Boomers were great defensively. I think Team USA kind of looked like they were in cruise control, which they're going to be it stages through this tournament. I don't want to take anything away from that second half comeback from Australia because it was great. But I thought in the USA game, it wasn't even the missed shots from Paddy that really bothered me. Like, he's going to miss shots. He's a guy that is going to be heavily defended every time he has the ball. That's why I think it's important. And I think that helps a Landale and Giddy pick and roll. I think it helps other guys find gaps in the defense. So that's why I think that they can work together. But the other thing is, I was curious, and you know, we'd have to ask Paddy and get inside his head, and I doubt it's going to be an answer you're going to get. The thing I was a little bit concerned about was some of the turnovers and kind of trying to force passes. He got called for travel two or three times as well. And it just, to me, looked like he was trying to really make things happen and maybe force things a little bit at times. And it wasn't in a selfish way. It just looked like a guy that was like, okay, I am running out of time. Let's get things going here. Let's make sure that I'm in good shape for this team because I know that I'm still important for them. So I was glad today that he probably had that feel-good performance and the turnovers. He only had two turnovers. He had the five assists and he had the 28 points. So, yeah, I actually wasn't too concerned about the shooting yesterday. It was more just, yeah, will he settle into this? He's probably in a position that he's never been in the green and gold where people are questioning. No one's ever questioned Paddy Mills. But I think if you look at the guys and write down the roster, who are the guys that can get off the dribble to a jump shot confidently and knock it down? Seriously, who are the guys? Jack McVay and Paddy Mills?
Yeah, that's probably it. Josh Green, maybe.
I think they really need Paddy Mills, like, badly. As much as people are saying he's unplayable, I'm just not buying into that.
Yeah, the other thing that obviously we have to note is that Paddy Mills does this all the time, where he is not very good in warm-up games going into major tournaments. And then as soon as the real stuff starts, he's generally fine, right? My issue with Paddy in the first few games, and I include the China games too, was I just think the shot selection was bad.
Yeah.
I thought he was taking tough shots. And again, it might be part of what you're thinking, which is him just trying to work himself into rhythm. Again, he hadn't played professional basketball at a consistent basis for a good amount of time. He just needed to get those reps. I don't know if that was helpful, though. I thought he was taking bad shots all through those China games, in that Team USA game. And I thought tonight's game against Serbia, I thought he was able to get his shots more in the flow of things. I agree with you to an extent that part of what Paddy was probably trying to do was, again, just get things going, right? Just get some reps into what he was doing. I also just think he just hadn't played basketball in a really long time. And he was maybe a split second behind, right? That's where I think some of those turnovers came from. But I honestly think today was a step for him because I don't think it was that he all of a sudden got from being bad to being good again.
Yeah, yeah.
I honestly think it was just more of a focus in getting his stuff within the flow of the offense. And I think that helped him. And then that in turn helped everyone because the key to Giddy and Landale being effective, the key to all of these athletic wings being effective is for that floor to be widened. The way to do that is for Paddy to hit shots. And I think that is only helpful when he's shooting good shots.
Yeah, so it's a great segue into the three-point shooting because this is going to continue to be a talking point for this team. And I think there's a bunch of willing shooters on this team, but just because you're a willing shooter doesn't necessarily make you a floor spacer in a way that, you know, our team's actually going to care if you're shooting.
Say his name, wide open threes. Say his name.
I think there is a bunch of guys here that have continued to improve. So, you know, Exum shot the ball really damn well this year. Josh Green shot the ball really damn well for the last two seasons in the NBA. We've seen Dyson Daniels hit a couple of threes over these first two games. But I am curious to see if the best weapon the Aussies have on offense is Josh Giddey and Jock Landale in pick and roll in the half court. I think their best weapon is going to be transition, turning defense into offense and getting easy buckets. I think that's their best weapon. But if Giddey and Landale is the best weapon offensively for this team, you know, how long is it going to be until teams are just like, you know what? You guys don't want to shoot threes. We know that. So we're just going to let those other guys shoot threes and we're not going to let you get points in the paint anymore. And we're going to shut this thing down. So if you look at Team USA, who has all the athleticism in the world and they can turn on and off the intensity, but the Boomers only got up 18 threes in that game. They only made four. Overall on made threes, USA 36 points, the Boomers 12. We saw it a little bit different today. They got up 23, which I think is still going to be down on. You know, if you look at some of the other nations, Canada, for instance, in the World Cup last year, got up around 32 a game. Most teams are going to be pushing 30. Greece, in the recent OQTs, they were at 31 a game. Spain was up at 29 to 30 as well. So they're still going to be behind there. And they made 14 threes across these two games. And in the end, you know, Patty had 5 of the 14. And, you know, I think that if I look up and down the roster, I don't necessarily think – I had Chris Golding in my final squad, by the way. But I don't necessarily know whether a specialized shooter, there was going to be a role there to actually get minutes. Because I don't think you can just plug guys in and say, okay, well, we just need to boost the three-point numbers. I think it has to come in the offense. But I think it's going to be a big part of whether this team can advance longer into this tournament, whether the guys like Daniels and Kay and even Landau, if he pops to the three-point line, to what breadth does he get minutes? They're going to have to hit threes, because if not, the math game is just not in the favor of this team. They are a long way behind.
Yeah, the games against China were misleading because that China defense, obviously it was a bad China team, but that China defense really just packed the paint. And that left guys open. That left. And obviously Chris Golding played in that series. He hit 8 threes in that series. Jack McVay hit a bunch of threes. Like this, it was sort of an anomaly. It wasn't really an indication of what this team was going to be. When you look at the personnel on this roster, it's going to be a low volume 3-point shooting team. And we know this. We saw it in these two games against two meaningful opponents. They would have averaged around 20 attempts a game, right? That's not very high. Now, the key is, one, obviously Patty Mills has to hit. That's going to be key. I think Jack McVay, for the most part, will have to play that role and hit. He's going to play between 8 and 14 minutes a game. He's going to have to – he's a very willing shooter, right? He got up a lot of shots, and I think he has to continue to do that because I think they trust his capacity to shoot them. So he needs to make those. And then basically Australia just needs to see what they saw tonight, which was some of those complimentary guys, some of those guys who aren't no-leave shooters – but they have to be treated as respectable shooters. And so that means Dyson Daniels hitting a 3. Matthew Dellavedova hit a 3. Landale did. Nick Kay went 1 of 7, but he hit 1. It was a really important one.
Yep.
These guys just need to be respectable. Dante Exum hit 1 at the end. Again, if they can just get those little bits of contributions from those guys from downtown, then as a whole, they should be okay. Again, they hovered around the 40, 43% mark today. If they could do that, that's really respectable. And I think everything else can function because of that. But the room for error is so little because they're going to be such a low volume team that it's going to be a weird one whether you can trust all those guys to chip in for 1 or 2 threes a game. Again, a lot rides on Patty Mills, a lot rides on Jack Magne to Jack McVay to help widen the floor for everybody.
Yeah, free throw line is going to be important as well. They got 24 attempts today. Patty Mills had 11 of those. I don't know how many games they're going to get 24 attempts, but that's another way not only get potentially opposition players in foul trouble, but able to just keep the scoreboard ticking over. And that's why I'm curious. We'll see. I would suspect, based on what we've seen in the past, I feel like the starting lineup for the opener against Spain is probably going to be what we saw today. Yeah, based on the consistency really we've had in the starting lineup outside of the bronze medal game in Tokyo a few years back when, you know, Thybulle did come in. I think that they will probably keep those guys. But then the second game you go against Canada and, you know, you talk about the backcourt, and I agree defensively is probably more of a concern for me. That's the game where I'm going small. I'm putting Exum, Green, and Daniels out there with Landau and Giddy and saying, okay, we need to match athleticism. We need to fly around on defense. We're going to try and get stops because turnovers for the opposition, they had 18, or the USA had 18 turnovers today. Serbia had 15. You want to see if you can get 15 plus turnovers against the opposition in a FIBA game, then you put yourself in the mix. Hopefully if they're live ball turnovers to get easy points as well. So yeah, the 3-point game I think is going to continue to be a talking point throughout. I'm not sure there's a way out of that outside of, you know, guys getting hot, which we hope is going to be the case. But yeah, I think free throw line, defense, chaos, turnovers, fast athletic basketball. And I think that's probably a way around it.
And I agree with you as far as sort of matching up against different teams and changing starting lineups based on matchups. Again, against Canada, they're probably going to play a more traditional wing as the four, mm-hmm. right? I don't know if I want Nick Kay to be that guy there who starts. I probably want it to be either Dyson Daniels sliding up or Dante Exum or Giddy sliding up or one of these guys, right? That makes a lot of sense. I think they're pretty set on this group. I agree with you against Spain and then against Greece as well. You're going to have to – Nick Kay was the matchup on LeBron and he was fine. You're going to have Nick Kay be the matchup on Giannis as well. He is probably the only reasonable matchup for him because Landale and those bigs are going to be guarding Papagiannis and some of these other guys. So I agree with that. Do you have a concern? I wrote it in my story today that'll drop at some point on ESPN.com.au. Do you have any concern about the bigs? I get this was not a great matchup in that regard because it was going from Joel Embiid to Anthony Davis to Nikola Jokic to even Bam Adebayo and then even Milutinov in this game as well. The Boomers looked quite small. Now, I get they have positional size across the board, but it seemed like any time a team was able to throw it down to their big, that guy is just bigger. They have generally a pretty good post game, and it forced the Boomers to help down, and then they're sort of out of whack defensively. I thought they did a good job in this game of doubling down and then sort of rotating and things like that. I thought they were largely fine. But do you think it could pose a problem down the line when they go up against these high-level bigs who can go to work in the post?
Yeah, it's hard to say because we kind of discussed it before we started, but you play Team USA and it's like, this is a completely different scale to any other team. Yeah, maybe Canada, but Canada doesn't have that size anyway. So if they're the second most talented team in the Olympics, then I actually think Australia is going to be fine in terms of size. Now, how do they perform on the day? That's a different question. But yeah, I think early in the game against Team USA, and this is why I don't want to completely take away what they did in the second half, because I think they settled into the game defensively. I thought there was some really quick doubles that the USA was like, all right, come on, man. We're just going to make two passes and knock down an open three. They had four threes in the first 3 minutes of the game. Australia had four for the whole entire game. So that's going to be, a problem. But I don't look at Spain, who might have Santi Aldama, Hernan Gomez. I don't see that they're huge threats to physically dominate in the post. And even Giannis, to an extent, we don't see him post up too often. He provides a different threat in terms of having the ball and getting downhill physically. So, foul trouble is always going to be a problem with him. But at least if we're looking at the group stage, if you wanted to look at perhaps areas that they'll feel okay, I think the bigs, they'll feel okay. But yeah, I think maybe that's why you like that you at least have Reith in reserve, because Landale did get in some early foul trouble against the USA. That's going to be a challenge. And they had some open threes on the other side. But yeah, I think in the group that they're in, they might be okay in that regard. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting because in the first game against Team USA, obviously they throw it down to Joel in the post and it was generally a pretty quick double and then it'd be a kick out, swing, open three. Again, like you said, I thought it tightened up in the third and fourth quarter where I thought the Boomers got a lot better at that. And then going to the game against Serbia, I thought they were really good at that, where they would also double down on either Nikola Jokic or Nikola Milutinov. And they were able to recover really well, rotate, and they held Serbia to 3 of 22 from downtown. And I think Serbia got sort of the looks that they probably wanted based on, feeding it down low and then getting those kickouts. But I thought Australia, I think the personnel is there to sort of fly out and make sure that those are low quality looks because of the contest that you're able to give them. The other part is holding this Serbia team with Nikola Jokic. Yes, they didn't have Bogdan Bogdanovic, but they held them to 73 points, less than 15% from downtown. And that was with the Boomers turning the ball over 17 times as well. So they gave Serbia a ton of extra possessions. Yes, they turned Serbia over 15 times, but they gave Serbia more possessions than Serbia gave them. And they were still able to hold them to 73 points. That's a pretty monumental defensive effort for this team. And I think that's obviously what this team is trying to hold its hat on, which is being really effective on that end. And then being able to push it, play with pace. I think the indicators that we saw in both of these games, especially the second half of the Team USA game and basically the entirety of the Serbia one, I think that really bodes well for what this team is trying to be as far as how they think they're going to be the most successful at the Olympics.
Yeah, and again, that's why people will be sitting at home scratching their head about Thabo. Like, how many bodies is not enough? And I'll look at the back end and I agree with you. Dele was fine when he came on. Ingles is going to play minimal minutes anyway. So I don't generally, as a rule, worry too much about the 11th and 12th man. I don't think it matters that much. But yeah, could you have done with another specialized defender? I would say probably yes.
It's for insurance. Like, that's purely it would have been for. Because, for example, you look at even today's game, you've got Josh Green played 13 minutes off the bench. I think those minutes should be up. Outside of that, and Dante Exum played 24 minutes. He plays a lot of the backup point. But there's no meaningful minutes there for Matisse Thybulle. So it would purely be as that insurance piece. But then I like the minutes from Dele, and I didn't mind the minutes from Joe Ingles as well. Joe Ingles added some creativity, made some really nice passes, created a little bit. And the Dele minutes, Dele and Dyson Daniels in the backcourt together for whatever, the 4 minutes they're on the floor together, that was really effective. They fly around, they cause havoc. I think it what Dele brings, it might not look that much on from a production standpoint, but I actually think it's meaningful from a pure impact standpoint.
I read a story today. I didn't get a chance to listen to the show yet, but I read a story where Andrew Bogut said that, or it might have been on SEN Radio or something like that, where Dele comes on the floor as if he's just drank seven Red Bulls, and it's a pretty good point. And you know, I don't expect him to play every night, and yeah, you know, I don't even expect Joe Ingles to play every single night. And once you get down to the nitty gritty of these group games, but yeah, I'm at the point where for the 11th and 12th guy, I'm not losing any sleep. But you open yourself up. If something happens to Green or Exum or Daniels, that's why we continue to talk about it. Because when you make that decision, you open yourself up if things go wrong, which ultimately is why they got the third big. So maybe you do that with a guard or a winger or an all-NBA defense defender as well. That's going to continue to be a talking point. And I don't blame people for not being able to move on. But overall, a pretty positive couple of games. We can't end this podcast without really diving into our man, Jack McVay, as you, around this time, a few hours later, as we're recording this now, Jack McVay getting an NBA opportunity. And that's what it is, particularly with the nature of the two-way contracts. They can be pretty volatile by nature, and they're easily the most flexible contract for NBA teams to do what they want with right throughout the season. Unbelievable development over the last few years. We feel like we've been let inside a little bit to Jack McVay because of the way that he talks about it and growth and development and really caring about other people. So you feel like you've got an attachment to this man as well. And as you wrote the story that I shared last night as well, that people can still find, you know, he could have been on his honeymoon, but he said, no, I'm going to go to training camp. I'm going to earn my way onto this Olympic team. I'm going to get a spot. I'm going to dominate China in one of those games. I'm going to come overseas. I'm going to the Paris Olympics. I'm going to get a two-way spot. So Jack McVay, one of the great stories in Australian basketball this year, and you have to feel good about it.
Yeah, and again, I think everyone's been talking about the same thing, which is Jack McVay's last 2 or 3 months, which it was All-NBL first team. It was helping lead the Jack Jumpers to a championship series. It was winning championship series MVP, hitting the biggest shot in NBL history, getting married, making the Boomer squad, making the Boomers team, and then ultimately he woke up this morning or yesterday morning, whatever it is, and signed a two-way contract. And it's crazy because I was speaking to some people, some NBA people about this, and 12 months ago, I don't know if any NBA team knows who Jack McVay is. That's 12 months ago. Maybe they have a passing knowledge of what he is or the name, but no one really knows who he is. No one's really interested in him. Fast forward 12 months. And
I think Tasmania is still just a Looney Tunes character.
That is correct. And fast
Olga
forward 12
told me
months.
To say that. The people of Tasmania, I've been on your side all year long. Olgan told me to say that. Blame him.
Dude, what's crazy is I went to Tasmania and it is a little island. So I'll just say that. It takes like 2 minutes to walk from one side of the city to the other. But Jack McVay, honestly, the past few months have been incredible for him. For him to, at this very moment, be an Olympian, about to go to the Paris Olympics, and also he's an NBA player right now. That's incredible. Obviously, there are some implications for the Jack Jumpers that are less than ideal. There's no buyouts for the two-way contracts, which is not great for them. They obviously lose their best local player, and there's a non-zero chance they lose Will Magnay as well because he's garnering significant NBA interest as well. So it could be an issue for them. But for Jack McVay, honestly, an incredible last few months, an incredible last few years for him in his growth. Couldn't speak more highly of him. And the coolest thing about this one is, let me say two more things, and I'm rambling. The first one is everyone likes Jack McVay. If you ask around the league, everyone's happy for him, right? That's the first thing. The second one is I got texts from a lot of players yesterday who are now using this as motivation. And it almost sounds patronizing, but because of what Jack McVay was as far as just a role player in the NBL and now looking at what he is and the fact that he's not some crazy athletic specimen, the amount of players who are now looking at this and thinking, if he can do it, I can do it. Like if he just put hard work in and he was able to get to this point, if he can do it, then man, anyone can do it. And so he's being used now as motivation for a lot of players around the NBL, a lot of players within Australian basketball. And I think that's a very cool thing that he's sort of like a beacon now.
And firstly, I'll say he is a crazy athletic specimen compared to me. But I did see on the social channels a lot of chatter for obvious reason. And the Jack Jumpers fans, we've discussed it before, they might be as active as, you know, maybe the Perth Wildcats are up there. Sydney Kings for sure in terms of vocal fan bases on the social media channels. But, you know, there were certainly some questions. And as you said, everyone was happy. But Jack Jumpers fans are like, oh, man, like, what is this? But this is what the NBL wants to be. So I don't think that, and I know contracts work differently, but there should never be a position where an NBL team can try and do anything to stop this. And I'm not saying they would. But this is what the NBL has marketed itself to be, as a platform to the NBA to give guys opportunities. And it doesn't guarantee everything. But the same thing happened to Melbourne United last year, or the offseason before that. The same thing happened to the Sydney Kings with Cooks and Vasiljevic as well. And for those guys, the NBA opportunities didn't work out. But if you're a team that is giving guys the chance to take that step and use the league as a platform to the NBA, that's what it should be about. And ultimately, Tassie, with what they've built under Scott Roth and in their short history and now winning the title, and the fact that basically every single player has gone there and got better, this is actually going to help the team. And I know it's not ideal right now if it happens at this stage of an offseason. It becomes really challenging. But this overall is going to be better for that team. And you got the title. So just celebrate for the next 12 months if things don't work out.
Yeah, and this happened with Will Magnay and the Brisbane Bullets, and they made it difficult for him to go, and it took them a while to sort of rebound and become a team that
they still have,
let's be honest. Correct. And this happened last year with Jalen Galloway and the Sydney Kings, and at some point, and teams just have to cop it. It is what it is. You know that if you sign a player and give him loose NBA outs, that there is potential for that player to go and sign a two-way contract, and you know that you're not going to get a buyout from that. And you just have to be proud of the development that you've invested in this player, the resources you've invested in that player's development, and you just have to hope for the best and do your best that when that player wants to come back to the NBL, you're the landing spot for them because you treated that player really well. Before we, I assume we have to go, and I'm so tired. I wanted your thoughts on Giddy during these two games, because I thought we saw some really good flashes. I also thought he missed a lot of makeable shots. He did a really good job, I thought, getting to every spot he wanted. He got 2 feet in the paint almost every single time he wanted to, but I thought he missed some easy looks, some easy floaters like around the paint. I wonder if you thought if that was a positive indicator from these two games.
Yeah, great. And, you know, one of the things that I think I said last week is that there will be some point during the Olympics, and we already saw a little bit of it yesterday, where people go, well, wait a second. The Chicago Bulls, they might have won this trade. Well, of course they did. It's the fit for the different teams. So both teams come out a winner. But Bulls fans should be very happy if this is a guy that can have the ball in his hands and initiate the offense. So overall, 12 for 29 from two-point range. To your point, he's got to be better than that. He can't shoot those really paint shots, whether it's the floater range or whether it's actually getting all the way there and getting some contact, not getting a call, not being able to finish. He's got to be better. But, you know, again, we are talking about a guy that will need some time to work his way into it as well, because he hasn't played in this role for 6 months. So, yeah. You know, with Josh Giddey, maybe there's some rust there as well. Now he's been asked to score more than he has in the past. But, yeah, I thought he looked good, and I wasn't surprised by it. He's a good player.
Yeah, I thought the discourse after that first game against Team USA, Giddey had 17, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, through some of those inbounds passes at the end. I think a lot of Bulls fans realized sort of literally in that moment that, oh, this is the player we're getting. This is role that this guy is going to play for our team, not the role that we saw him play at the back end of the Thunder's playoff series last year. So I think that's interesting. Yeah, for me, I thought the indicators were good. I thought he got to the spots he wanted to. I thought the partnership between him and Landale was really, really impressive. It's just making those makeable shots, and that's important in games where you have to win them. There is such little room for error. You need to make those makeable shots.
I'm glad you brought up Giddy at the end there. It was certainly worth bringing up. Yeah, I thought he was a positive. He's probably going to have to be the best player in the team, if not him or, you know, Jock Landau. We'll see what Paddy Mills can do. But the young guys are coming through for this team. But, yeah, he's going to have to be a major, major part. And we know Brian Gorgon spoke about that before. So that was a nice one to finish on from you. I hope that our listeners or our viewers are feeling perhaps a little more positive than they were a couple of days ago against this Boomer, about this Boomers team, I should say. And look, we watch the NBL, we cover the NBL, we cover the NBA. I don't, you know, for a team to have success, you know, you don't get the opportunity too often to get really excited and juiced up about what could potentially come. But I'm pretty excited after watching these two games, and you get to support the country. You hope they do well. We know the Opals as well. Looking very, very nice. The WNBA girls still wrapping up their stuff, and they're going to join, come together all over in Europe here over the next few days as well on the road to Paris. But it's exciting. And if you've got thoughts about the lineups, the teams, what you saw the last few days, as I said, hit us up on social media. YouTube, where the video is up, is a great place. The comments were going crazy last week. We're not too surprised about that, but let's keep the same energetic nature about the comments, get involved in the show, because we're going to continue to build this thing right through the Olympics and hopefully a long Olympic run for all the Australian teams. Olgs, get some sleep, my friend. And as we pointed to, everyone go to ESPN.com.au. Olgs recap from this game against Serbia. But you've done well, mate. You should be proud of yourself. Time to get some sleep.
Thank you. Thank you. Look, largely good indicators for the Boomers. Honestly, I don't know if they could have escaped Abu Dhabi feeling better. Like it was a loss and it was a win against Serbia, but honestly, I think they should be really happy with the progress they've made. So yeah, I need sleep. Let me sleep.
Well said. Olga Norlich, Kane Pippen. This has been the ESPN Aussie Hoops Hour. Thanks for joining us again. We'll speak to you very shortly.